WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, August 28th. It appears that the immigration detention facility known as Alligator Alcatraz is finally shutting down. After an August 7th ruling halting construction, followed by an August 21st order to remove all federal agencies, Florida Emergency Management Director Kevin Guthrie has been quoted stating that within a matter of days, the number of detainees will be zero. The quickly constructed incarceration center, intended for thousands of inmates, has been a flashpoint between the recent governmental attacks on American immigrants and the many protesters decrying environmental harm and widespread inhumane conditions. The town of Longboat Key has removed street signs designating the name of its longest road, Gulf of America Drive. However, for the time being, mail and official business are not affected. This follows a new Florida law, effective July 1st, intended to restore names that honor American greatness. While legislation for the new Gulf of America name is pending, the signless route officially defaults to its standard name, State Road 798. The town will hold a public meeting on the issue on October 20th. Former FEMA Director Deanne Criswell has issued a warning that budget cuts to the Federal Emergency Management Agency may be a major problem for the remainder of this year's hurricane season. This comes after 190 former and current FEMA employees sent a letter of concern to Congress. Many of those employees since put on leave in an apparent act of retaliation. In June, President Trump stated the intention of phasing out FEMA. Governor Ron DeSantis declared that the state could do without federal funds, although last year FEMA approved over $1 billion in disaster relief for Floridian. The all-important form for student financial aid, FAFSA, will be available on time, October 1st. The free application for federal student aid had a disastrous rollout period last year, with delays and malfunctions setting students and institutions back months in financial aid processes crucial to the beginning of the school year. This has been Rick Knowlton with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, August 28th, 2025.
Program has been pre-recorded. Please enjoy this special presentation.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Today, I am joined by Tom Edwards, who serves on the Sarasota County School Board. He is beginning, I believe, you're coming into your sixth year of service. Is that right, Tom?
I'm about halfway through my fifth year.
Okay. And you, Tom, at the last school board meeting, so we're recording this on the weekend after the meeting, which was August 19th. And at that meeting, there's been a lot of news. Late Friday, DeSantis's office put out an announcement that Karen Rose was being appointed to the school board to replace Tim Enos, who resigned to take the position of chief of security. So we could spend a whole hour talking about Ms. Rose's appointment, but that's actually not. We'll get to that a little bit today and in future shows, I'm sure. But today we're going to talk about the public did not expect a resignation from Tim Enos. And Mr. Enos did serve as the head of the school resource officers before he was elected to the school board. So it's familiar terrain for him. But at the end of that August 19th meeting, when Superintendent Connor, during the meeting, had informed the public that Mr. Enos would be once again chief of security for Sarasota County Schools, you shared some remarks that I think took a lot of people by surprise. And there's a lot of stuff that happens over time and behind the scenes that unless someone like you shares it, the public doesn't know. So I just wanted to, because that's not something that's going to happen in a school board meeting where you're really going to get to flesh out your remarks. You express concern about how Mr. Enos and why Mr. Enos was hired. So, Tom, you know, I just want to start there and give you the opportunity to explain two things. Why the hiring process raised some red flags or concerns for you, and then why there might be a trust issue here that's important for the public to know about. So,
well, Kathy, first of all, thank you for having me on. And as you mentioned, it's once again a time at the school board where it's tumultuous based upon the budget concerns that we've all been going through, the vouchers' high impact on those budgets. And then what I perceive to be as a perhaps an unforced error in the hiring of Mr. Enos. I'll share my thoughts a little deeper about that. And then due to the hiring of Mr. Enos in that position, it obviously vacated a school board seat. And you can well imagine the political affiliation of Mr. Enos and his cohorts, the majority votes, the majority shareholder votes, if you will, of the board would be the governor is going to reassign somebody to either have a Bridget Ziegler kind of impact, an extremist viewpoint like the governor has. So when all that was coming down the pike, I was trying to tell the public on Tuesday night that what led up to this announcement of Tim Enos has a lot more intrigue and a lot more politics, if you will, than meets the eye. And what is about to happen, which I didn't know who the appointee was, but I could pretty much guarantee it wasn't going to be good news.
Mm, yeah. No, I think, I mean, I had some ideas of who might be appointed. I certainly thought it would be somebody new, right? Because Ms. Rose had every advantage as an incumbent in 2024 to win her race. But she decisively lost to Liz Barker. And that was kind of a brutal race. And well, it was, you know, hard.
Ugly. I would describe it as ugly.
Well, you, I'm sure you were there for all of the debates and everything. And the other thing that's really noteworthy is that when she lost, Ms. Rose never showed her face again at a school board meeting, yeah. Which to me, I don't care what your party is, you know, showing up for work is the job. Right.
Yeah. And you know what? You have a responsibility to, as a school board member, to conduct yourself in a way that is leading by example, not just for the district and your community, but for students.
And
good civic behavior for students is, to me, the number one reason why you would show honor and integrity by returning and completing your elected duties.
Yeah, and I should clarify, Karen Rose did attend via Zoom, correct?
Listen, there was no way of knowing, I think, at least from my seat. I don't know if she, I saw sometimes she cast a vote, and often Vice Chair Enos at the time would ask for her vote or ask for her comment, and there was dead air. So I'm not sure she was on the call the entire time.
Okay. So it is fair to say that, you know, even though she was on Zoom, that doesn't really mean she was obviously not present, not voting some of the time.
I have no way of knowing.
If she didn't vote, I mean, if they're asking for a vote and there's no answer, that's pretty clear to me. That's a whole show to talk about the implications of appointing Karen Rose, the tone deaf aspect of that in terms of the community weighed in and said, no, we want somebody different. And I got to believe there are people without the baggage that she has that could have served. But some of the concerns you brought forward about intrigue behind, or there was a process happening behind the scenes for quite a while, that this wasn't actually something decided in terms of Mr. Enos becoming the chief of security. This wasn't something that happened over a 2-week period. He resigned and then, there was obviously a plan, but what did you know about this plan, or what were you aware of, and how long were you aware that Mr. Enos was being looked at or wanted to be the chief of security for the board?
The timing question is a very important component to me around what I referred to in my comments as trust and integrity. What I think happens on the dais and in the school board room in those meetings is what I refer to as one-dimensional. The other two dimensions that really come into play when I'm casting a vote are the behind-the-scenes conversations that I have with my superintendent and understanding all of the issues that we're facing on a monthly basis. He and I tend to meet for a total, I would say, of anywhere from 3 to 4 hours a month. And that doesn't include the phone conversations and text messages that happen back and forth between us, just to keep current on my concerns and his concerns. So I would start by saying, I think everybody knows that I spend a lot of time in the community. I'm visiting schools. I attend events in the community. I have season passes at theatrical events. I spend a lot of time in the community, and I've developed what I refer to as really significant, trustworthy relationships with people on, in fact, both sides of the aisle in various positions, who over the 5 years I've been doing this trust me and trust my decisions and trust my conversations to share information with me. So there's a lot of information that goes into what I'll say on the dais. So when you ask me the question about Mr. Enos and what's the lead up to that job or to him getting that job, I know for a fact that he discussed that position, that high-level, high-ranking position with Dr. Asplin. It was common knowledge at the landings that there was a quid pro quo, if you will, that had been established between Dr. Foster and Tim Enos, that had she been named superintendent at the time instead of Mr. Connor, that he was going to get that position. And
she,
then
She was the interim.
She was the interim superintendent. Okay. And then there was a conversation that, quite frankly, Mr. Connor and I had for 2 years because of those rumors, because of the knowledge I had about the conversations with Dr. Asplund, that this was likely going to occur with Mr. Enos.
So that he would lobby for that job.
Exactly.
Okay. And to your point, Tim Enos was the only school board member that voted for Dr. Foster to become superintendent. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Okay. Okay. So you've been aware for quite some time that Tim Enos wanted to be the chief of security. Let me ask you this. What about the thought of, well, listen, once a cop, always a cop. It's just a job that he likes better, you know? And I'm curious, and maybe that's not a bad thing, you know? Maybe it's a good fit. Maybe he shouldn't have. I do appreciate that if you've run for public office, you know, you've made a commitment, you should serve your term, right? But what would you say to somebody about with that point of view is like, what's the harm? I mean, he did it before. That's where his heart is. He's good at it.
Yeah. So I would say to you that I think Mr. Enos in his heart is a good guy. I would say he's credentialed to be a chief of security for our school district. And to my knowledge, he really grabbed a hold of a flailing SRO security department when he became chief the first time and turned it around and made it one of the best, if not the best, in the state. So I admire all of that work. And when he was the chief and I was a school board member, I had the utmost of respect for him. And really no hard feelings. And he retired, told everybody on the school board, at the school, at the landings, that he was ready for a new chapter, didn't know what it was. But once again, through my contacts in the Republican Party and in my contacts in the community, I had heard that he was interested in running for school board. So, and once again, you know, at the time, everyone's entitled to that. Why wouldn't he make a good school board member? And why wouldn't the voice of the head of security be a welcome voice on the dais? Was kind of how I looked at it.
Mm-hmm. So The thing is, and I think, you know, in some of the discussion before the show, you had mentioned to me that you did have concern because it's really about trust and process in terms of the concerns you're bringing forward and sharing with the community here, that Mr. Enos was looking to outsource the security department during his tenure or looking at that. Is that accurate?
I'm going to back up for 1 second because where I have now issues with Mr. Enos in that job was I'm concerned about the politics as it enters into how he makes decisions. So again, as I said, he ran for school board. He won. He was part of what I refer to as, or not I, the community referred to as the ZEM campaign. And the ZEM campaign, which was Ziegler, Enos, and Marinelli, that whole campaign process was not, but that was an ugly process.
Yeah.
There was the Moms for Liberty. There was a lot of stuff. There was the driving around of a van that attacked one of the opponents about being a baby killer. I mean,
yeah. Which, by the way, when they first started driving around, there was no paid for by. They slapped that on when, you know.
So we could have a whole conversation about campaigning. And,
yeah.
And certainly, so my point is, you see all of this ugliness, and this was around, I mean, Mrs. Ziegler I could expect. Mrs. Marinelli I didn't know. And when I looked at Mr. Enos, I was frankly shocked because I had a different impression of his level of integrity, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So then he is elected. The day he is sworn in, he stood up and thanked by name the same people who came into the school board room for the 2 years prior and caused such a storm with the bullying they gave towards me, towards the LGBTQ plus community, towards the Black community. I mean, it was an endless parade of people that came in with hateful, ugly nastiness. And Mr. Enos knew who those people were because he was the chief of security while that was going on. And there were Proud Boys in the room. And he went up and thanked those people for getting him elected. And minutes later, he goes to the dais with Karen Rose and Robin Marinelli and Bridget Ziegler and calls for the emergency meeting that ultimately terminated a beloved superintendent. Mm-hmm. And I, again, once again, was shocked that Mr. Enos was in the middle of it and could only assume what I perceived to be his high level of integrity had been compromised by political forces.
Yeah. So, you know, as I listen to this, I'm thinking, I mean, you were targeted by, we'll call it the extreme right in this community. These were people affiliated, still affiliated with the Proud Boys. There is reason to be concerned about political violence with that group. That is a reasonable concern. And to straddle the world of thanking folks who are affiliated with an organization that's engaged in political violence, that's just a fact, right? So on the one side, and I'm just reflecting back how it sounds to me if I were in your shoes, but as a community member, here you've got, and I like Tim Enos. I had him at a town hall at WSLR when he was the head of the first time, the school resource officers, great respect for his work that he did. But you're changing gears as a political candidate and cozying up with people who've are a reasonable security threat, right? Or, you know, even nationally, this organization, you have to be concerned about the lengths they will go to if they are upset. And these folks expressed they weren't happy with you. And so now you're here having to trust somebody who's made it clear that they'll align with these folks politically, thank them, be on board with firing a school board superintendent who, as you said, was beloved. And that happened, that was in 2022 when the Zem, Ziegler, Enos, and Marinelli were sworn in. To me, it was clear that it had been orchestrated behind the scenes, which is improper, right? There should be at least some discussion. It shouldn't be a lockstep. Okay, now Asplund's head is on the chopping block. Oh yeah, okay, everybody on board. And those aren't qualities that I want to see in someone that's heading up security, because it looks to me like they're compromised. You know, that's just my take. I think there's reason to ask Tim Enos, are you going to hold these guys to the same standards that you hold everybody else? Are you going to protect everyone?
You know why I'm saying that if politics come knocking at Tim's door while he's as the newly hired chief of security, all I've seen up to this point is that he's voted in an extremist political agenda. And when I think you alluded a few minutes ago about the outsourcing of the SRO department, while he was still on the board, this probably goes back about, I want to say, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I brought to the superintendent's his awareness a concern that I had received by several community members. And when, again, I'm saying several community members, several of these folks are law enforcement. Several of them are, as I mentioned prior, from the Republican Party, admittedly. And they said that Mr. Enos had been saying around town that he has the 3 votes necessary to outsource the security department.
So this was during the first 2 years of his term?
This was about 6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
So I brought it to Mr. Connor's attention, and we had several conversations about it, which I don't need to go into the details of that. But what brings me concern is if that's the case, if he had this leverage of the 3 votes to outsource the department, which I was adamantly opposed to, which Mr. Connor said on face to face that he was opposed to, did that pressure come, additional pressure of the 3 votes, influence Mr. Connor's decision to hire Mr. Enos into the job? I don't know the answer to that, but that raises, as you could well imagine, the question in my head, how did that happen, based upon all the conversations that we had otherwise. So I don't want to accuse anyone. I'm just saying that if I have a 3-dimensional chessboard of all the conversations that I've had and all the behaviors I've witnessed and all the votes that I saw cast, I ask myself that very valid question. Did Mr. Connor feel pressured into that hire? I don't know.
Well, can I just, you're being very careful and I appreciate that. And I think Mr. Connor is, you know, I had Tom Knight on the show last week. And I give a lot of room, or 2 weeks ago, I give a lot of room to staff ultimately when a commission makes it clear or a school board makes it clear how they're going to vote. Staff doesn't work in a vacuum, you know, and Mr. Connor is staff. So I don't see how it couldn't influence him when he knows that, first of all, was it a shock to him that Karen Rose was brought back? Probably not. I don't know. But when you've got 3 votes, Ziegler, Marinelli, and now Rose, and then Enos, you know, when he was on there, who basically made mincemeat of the former superintendent, absolutely no professionalism, just fired the guy who was doing a good job. Nobody wanted it. You know, we're still not clear who's driving the bus in terms of the agenda. I don't think those 4 votes were without some, you know, grand plan, philosophy. I mean, the governor's office is taking a really unusual interest in school boards. So I don't see how Mr. Connor could not have been pressured. I just think that's my take. It's my opinion. He's got kids. They're in high school. I sure wouldn't want to have to leave a community when my kids were in high school. If I knew there were 3 votes and this is what they wanted, it's tough, right?
And that is really why I felt that it was necessary to explain to the board if what I had seen, and I'm using the words trust and integrity to explain how I feel about what I feel, and knowing that this decision, whether pressured or otherwise, from by Mr. Enos having to resign, creating a vacancy on the board, and knowing, to your point, was there a bigger plan in the firing of Dr. Asplund? Most probably. And is this now another one of those bigger plans where Mr. Enos gets an attaboy or thank you, like I've seen happen around the state in other, other elected official positions? Is it part of a master plan for the governor to replace that spot? I can only tell you that it felt that way. And I have pretty good instincts and I have pretty good assessment skills. I was sharing with the public on Tuesday, the 19th the evening. I have about 99% of the puzzle pieces. I was waiting for that last puzzle piece to drop on Friday and bingo.
Karen Rose being appointed.
Exactly. So what plan will those the Zem or now and the reunion of Karen Rose, what plan will they have for the school district? Because they're not going to be there just to play nicely. They haven't yet. So
no.
Why would this be any different?
So to kind of flip it around a little bit, one of like I said, I have very positive experiences with Tim Enos. Not like I have talked with him a whole lot, but, he was.
So had I.
Yeah. He did a town hall at Fogartyville where we were talking about school security. He's a professional. I really appreciated his vote against having Vermillion, which was an unproven neophyte company, curriculum company that in a Hillsdale College agenda spearheaded by Mrs. Ziegler and, her cohort, the community was up in arms at the thought that a Hillsdale College curriculum, because the principal with Vermillion had worked at Hillsdale, and it was very clear that the ideology was going to be similar. And the community made it really clear, we don't want a company like that coming in and making curriculum recommendations or, and analyzing our curriculum. That's not a good fit. And he voted against it. I'm wondering because... And I think subsequently he pretty much always voted with Ziegler and Marinelli and Rose. But that was a big limb to step out on. And he did listen to the community. And I'm wondering if because he was no longer considered a lockstep vote that somebody up the line decided, one of the strategists out there said, listen, you can have a different job. It's probably the one you want anyway. And you leave that seat so we can put in somebody that we know is in our, is going to vote the way we want. That's just what I wonder.
Again, I think what we're doing is grabbing at straws as to, what was the actual, and I think that is a valid
conversation. I don't think it's grabbing at straws at all, Tom. I know you have to be diplomatic. This is my opinion.
These folks play a long game.
They play a long game.
Agreed. And so I'm saying, is it that game or is it the game to really have a different agenda? And I'll get to this in a second, but
yeah.
Mr. Enos voted lockstep in the Zem Rose situation up to Vermillion. And mm-hmm. I would agree with you that Mr. Enos demonstrated the level of integrity that I was accustomed to at that one vote. But then every vote subsequently, he voted in lockstep once again, including the Title IX resolution and including the most recent passage of the policies that got advertised that eliminated the protective classes, even though Mrs. Ziegler said her vote meant excluding LGBTQ plus and transgender. And she made it a point that all did not mean all for her. And Mr. Enos and Mrs. Marinelli still voted with her. And
clarify that this was what vote?
This was on Tuesday night that we were advised from our attorney to change the policy language for our student code of conduct and our discrimination policy. And in both of those policies, we had listed all of the protected classes, including sexual orientation and gender identity. In the revision of those policies, we eliminated the roster list of protected classes, and we cited all the Title I, Title IX, Title IV, and the EEOC and any federal policies that referred to discrimination or harassment, but none of the federal policies for students cover gender identity and sexual orientation. If you recall, President Biden was attempting to alter the Title IX language at one point, and Mr. Enos voted with Mrs. Ziegler at that time to not honor Mr. Biden's edits or proposed changes and to side with the governor who said they would never pass in Florida or never be enforced in Florida. So they all four assigned an unnecessary resolution is my point, to go out of their way. So when you add all of this up, he did vote lockstep with them with that one exception. So your theory could hold water that he is saying, I don't want to be put in that position.
Yeah.
And I would rather give up my job. Your theory could hold water, but I want to also point out that the only time, that's 99.9% of the time, he voted with his party.
Yeah. It's interesting too, but how much does this position pay the chief of security? Do you know?
I found out after that he was hired. And by the way, the superintendent does have, when we hire the superintendent, we give him the keys to the candy store and say, you're responsible for running the district. We're a governing board. We're policy. And you report to us. So yes, he does have complete and total control to hire and fire at will. Okay. Yes. So I want to make sure I'm clear on that. But yeah, the precedent that he and I had always had, and I'm assuming all the other board members were the same, that for key high-level cabinet positions, the CFO, the previous chief of security, and any key...
Who was the previous chief, by the way?
Mr. Ruiz.
Okay.
Or any other key promotions or firings, Mr. Connor would get our advice, get our input, and all of those conversations would happen, you know, prior to the actual hire or the fire or the promotion. All of that had been precedent, and what I loved about it is it made at least this board member feel like we were a team, that we were a good team, as a matter of fact.
Did you feel that way this time?
It did not happen this time. I was brought in and told he was hired, which meant that I was, if not the last person to know officially, but I did know because of all the contacts I have in town.
Okay.
I had been alerted ahead of time. So it was, again, unusual that the superintendent would do it after the fact.
So he essentially
Oh, and you asked me the salary. And this I know because I found out the next morning after I found out he's being paid $175,000.
Okay. So essentially the process you were used to, a collaborative process of, you know, information gathering and vetting by the superintendent, that was a process where you weren't blindsided. But in this hire, you were.
Yeah, and I mean, the other part about feeling blindsided is that I had several conversations over a two-year period about my sensitivity towards that specific hire.
Me specifically, that Mr. Enos appeared to want to go back to that job, and you had concerns because of his the way he kind of
lobbied for it,
but also was friendly to people who had attacked yourself, or, you know, like, security is the job.
And the votes that he had cast specifically around Title IX and protected classes.
So meaning LGBTQ, are students regarding sexual orientation or gender identity going to get equal protection, right? That's the issue.
That's a question of mine.
Okay.
And then our Hispanic children and families, particularly at this time of immigration, when you ask me if Mr. Enos could compromise himself and his integrity for being a law enforcement officer for all, when I watched him not as a chief of police, but as an elected official, be influenced by politics and by a party, could that happen while he was chief? The question I had to ask.
Yeah, so it's one thing when you, so what was he making when he was chief of security before? Do you happen to know?
I don't have an exact figure, but my recollection was that it was around $90,000.
Wow.
So if you...
That's a big difference.
If you sort of add up, let's say even if we tried to say he, you know, if he had stayed in the job, he would have gotten raises along the way, but those raises were anywhere...
Not that much.
3 or 4%. And even if you compound them, and sometimes they were as high as 7%, I think, if you compound them, it doesn't even bring you anywhere near close to $175,000.
Okay, so we're talking about a situation where, if your memory serves, around $90,000, earning that in the year 2021, he runs for school board. He becomes a school board member. How much does school board make?
I think it's 52,000.
Okay. So you go from 90 grand to 52 grand, and then you resign and get your old job back, and you get an $85,000, give or take, because you're not, it's maybe not an exact number, but you're getting a big, almost 100% or at least 80% increase from what you made 4 years ago, and you're making more than three times what you're making as a school board member. It just reminds me of seeing state legislators who leave, like Richard Corcoran. You know, state legislators don't make much money. They make like $30,000. We're seeing former state legislators, and this has direct implications for their pensions. They're becoming, in this circumstance that I'm thinking of, college or university presidents making $200,000, $250,000. You know, with Richard Corcoran, it's like $800,000, much more than their prior salaries. And I'll just name some of them. Fred Hawkins, who was a state legislator, president of South Florida State College. Tommy Gregory, now president of State College of Florida. He was a Manatee County state legislator. Mel Ponder, now president of Northwest Florida State College. Adam Hasner, another state legislator, became Florida Atlantic University president. This is all in the past 2 years. State Representative and Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez became president of Florida International University just this year. Manny Diaz, the former state representative and education commissioner, in May became president of the University of West Florida. And we've got Richard Corcoran. None of these people have any qualification, you know, and their pay bumps are exponential. I mean, they're making 200 to 300 grand when they were making 30 as state legislators. That has a huge impact on their pension. It's not like Mr. Enos is in the same bucket for me, but you can't ignore the reality that this move is going, if he stays there for, I don't know, it's like 2 or 3 years, it's the last few years of your base salary is used to calculate your state pension. So I just think that's worth noting.
I think that's a component that I would also say is not lost on me. I didn't say it on the dais on Tuesday, but I don't get a lot of time to speak to the public about my concerns, about what I see as a particular issue. So I know that my timing for what I did on Tuesday evening was awkward at best, because everyone was signing off and wishing Mr. Enos all the best. And I had to know that what I was about to say was probably going to hurt Mr. Enos's feelings. And I don't deliberately set out to do those types of things, but I felt that my responsibility to alert the public to the concerns I had about the selection of that person in a security job and how I got to those levels of concerns is my role as an elected official, is to make sure that when I see and I'm uncomfortable or any of those types of things, I have to be 100% transparent, or I can't look myself in the mirror and know that I've represented my county and the students and their families to the best of my ability.
Yeah. And from where I sit, you know, I so appreciate law enforcement. They have a really difficult job, and we need excellent school resource officers. And I think Mr. Enos had acquitted himself very well in that role. And then he went on to the school board. I think the problem is, I don't want to know the political leanings of my law enforcement officers. I just want them to do their job and uphold they take an oath for the Constitution, to follow the law. That's what I want them to do. Once they go into a political arena, I think the genie's out of the bottle in terms of their attitudes. And I don't know that that's actually so great for them being able to go back and be neutral, right?
So, well, that was my concern.
Look at it and go, I think it's fair to raise these questions. And I will invite Tim Enos on so that he can address them. I think he should address them because, you know, we need to know that every student is going to have the same kind of protection. But you had mentioned the concerns about immigration. I think you're talking about ICE, what's going on with citizens, actually, who have been detained without due process. People who are here legally may not be citizens, but they do have legal status, not being able to see their lawyers. And, you know, this is, of course, I'm referring to Alligator Alcatraz. And I think that that's not something we want to see happening in our schools in Sarasota. So that's one piece. But there was a teacher this past week, who posted about their concerns regarding Ashton Elementary School and what's going on. And there's two aspects of this. One is the school board's undergoing a real budget crisis. But the other aspect is looking at the services and the staff that are being cut. So we only have a few minutes left, Tom, but I do want to read her comments in full because they were deeply concerning to me when I saw them. And it really is a whole nother show, but I'd like to get your take on it. Okay. So this was posted on, I believe, August 20th. August 20th. And this teacher writes, "Today is a down in the dumps, quote, basement, unquote, kind of day. I promise to wake up in the morning tomorrow and climb back up to my balcony of positivity. But until then, I hope you will let me indulge in my soapbox. Since May of 2025, my beloved Ashton Elementary, ranked 32nd in the state of Florida last year, has lost its mental health therapist, its behavior specialist, an assistant principal, a school counselor, two behavior techs, an ESOL liaison, and that's English for speakers of other languages, two ESE teachers, these are exceptional student education teachers, a half-time ESE instructional facilitator, a half-time tech specialist, an ESE paraprofessional, and a school-wide interventionist. As if this wasn't devastating enough to the most vulnerable populations today, we got word that we lost an additional 5 teachers after the 5-day count. Because we already had to surplus a handful of wonderful staff members due to Sky Ranch opening, so that's a new school. And she says, we have such a dedicated senior staff, but this means we are losing teachers with over a decade of experience. It just doesn't seem right, and the madness has to stop. I'm posting this not for sympathy, as our amazing school will rebuild and be stronger than ever, but for advocacy and knowledge of what is going on, as oftentimes this does not always make the headlines at the school board meetings. If you know of teachers in our amazing school district, please keep them in your thoughts and prayers, as it already has been one roller coaster ride of a year, and it's only the second week back. Again, tomorrow it is back up to the balcony where we will shout from the rooftops, we are Ashton Strong." You know, I read this, first of all, as I've written about for a long time, well-known when it comes to universal vouchers. These charter schools don't have the same standards when it comes to special education. They don't have to. Private schools don't have to have the same credentials for their teachers, and they aren't required to provide the same services that public schools are required to provide. What's being gutted, at least in Ashton Elementary, are the special education teachers and services, as well as English for speakers of other languages. My stepkids were they came here and they spoke Portuguese and they needed to learn, and they have gone on to do great things. So it's personal for me when I look at this. We need to do another show, but Tom, this is a universal voucher issue, isn't it? It's really not.
It's 100% a universal voucher issue. And I would also say it's 100% not just of what happens from Tallahassee and the legislators, but it's also the distractions of what happens on the school board of those same 3 votes, because those 3, Mrs. Rose and Mrs. Ziegler, in my opinion, are not friends of public schools and supported the vouchers, and they're welcomed back on the board with open arms because the governor deliberately put them there. I know we're on a time capsule. Yeah. I don't want to go over, but please have me back, because I would love to tell you it was a coordination between our school board and the Tallahassee, and not just our school board, school boards across the state. It was deliberately done.
Well, by a certain faction, right? A certain ideological faction within the state of Florida that wants us all to believe that the universal vouchers are good for education, even in general. I haven't seen any evidence that if you normalize the, if you take into account the variables of family income and look at the outcomes with charter schools, they cherry pick their kids. Private schools, they don't have to take everyone. Public schools have to take everyone. And that is a big difference. And when the public school outcomes are appropriately, well, how do I put it? There's just no evidence that these private schools actually deliver a better education.
It's there is more, none, that's true.
Yeah, it's actually more likely that they are.
I want to tell you this.
Wait a minute, I just want to finish the thought. They're choosing the kids that are going to do better. They don't want the tough kids to teach. So, go ahead, sorry.
I just want to point out to you, because again, I think it's a whole conversation, but school choice in Sarasota was working just fine beforehand. There were a couple of schools that I wasn't a fan of that were charter schools for profit, but we didn't have a ton of those.
Yeah.
And now we've lost nearly almost $47 million that we've had to try and scramble and figure out. And it's 100% because of the vouchers.
And I want to clarify, when I'm talking about problematic charter schools, I'm talking about for-profit. I'm talking about corporate charter schools. I'm not talking about Sarasota Military Academy. I'm not talking about the School of Arts and Sciences. There are great charter schools within the umbrella of the public school system. They're not the trouble. They're not the problem children.
Agreed.
So they're not the ones hollowing out the school board budget. So, and we are going to be getting a lot of propaganda about ESE and ESOL being somehow education pork, which is a bunch of nonsense. This is somebody covering their you know what, because we are going to see devastating budget cuts, and it is all because of this universal vouchers. And you can thank Bridget Ziegler for that. And Bridget, I would love to have you on my show to talk about this. I'm really concerned about what you've done here. Tom Edwards, thank you so much for joining me today. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Make it a great day.
WSLR seeks citizen reporters for its volunteer-powered twice-weekly broadcast and daily headlines. If you're interested in sharing the stories that matter to working people, including coverage of local elections, public schools and the environment, healthcare access, and housing affordability, then we want you to join our team. Experience is not required. Training is provided. If you're interested in becoming a WSLR news volunteer, email news@wslr.org or call 941-894-6469.